go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off and running for this 29th day of August, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is the little place on the interweb tubes that we call home. And it's where you can go and click on the tab chat room and pick yourself up a screen name and a password and jump into the merrymaking at the wacky, zany, multimedia, madcap, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you do all that, if you pick out a screen name and a password, you will be immediately greeted by Anatole and Earther and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and B.T. Blom, all capably moderated by midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Okie doke. You'll have a wonderful time. Hell, I'm there too. You know, okay? I mean, will wonders never cease? This is, I have to say it, a listener-supported broadcast. That's how we keep all plates spinning on top of all the sticks. That's how we pay the bills. That's how we keep things up and running. And, you know, there's good news. We've got a fundraising holiday both Thursday and tomorrow, which would be the 30th and 31st of August. Yay. There will be, and it will be a relief to me, there will be no mentions of fundraising whatsoever. Either tomorrow or Thursday. Now, that's because people responded, and we knocked down fundraising for 2 days out of the four remaining days of August. And so here we are, the last day of available fundraising of the month. And we are $330 away from finishing off the month of August. So 33 folks need to kick in at $10 a piece or become $10 a month subscribers, whatever. Or 10 people need to kick in at $33. 33 at 10, 10 at 33. Yes. Or one person needs to kick in at $330. Or two people need to kick in at $165. Or four people need to kick in at $41.25, I think. Yeah, that's it. So, but if we do not reach that fundraising goal for this evening, if we don't reach that 330, we will not lick the Lithuanian, we will not nudge the Norsky, and so that's where we stand. Because there will be no mention of fundraising either tomorrow or Thursday, okay? I'm looking forward to doing a program without having to fool with it, honestly. But if you want to help out, you know, headonradionetwork.com, go to the tab that says, called Contribute, fill out a very brief little bit of information, and boom, away, we are gone, and we are off and running. So that's where we stand. The mailing address, of course, for those of you who prefer to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Checks and money orders only, please. Cash tends to get disappeared between you and here or there. Hate to say it, but it's true. and checks, and they should be made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. That's Boss Man Wayne there that takes care of all that. So, that takes care of that. I will mention it periodically, depending on where we find ourselves as the evening progresses. It is Tuesday. It is Titanic Tuesday. It is a it's the last Titanic Tuesday of August 2017. We have some Titanic. You know what Titanic Tuesday is named for. It's that day in the far and dim mists of time now when our buddy Jim was listening to local right-wing radio, and one of the most stentorian, stultifying monotones ever to get behind a microphone, Steve, who took a break from reading the newspaper to his listeners. That's what constituted doing radio for him every morning, which he did in that aforementioned monotone. And he took a call from someone who said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I was down in the mines and I seen them in the top there. Seashells and ferns and all kinds of things." And Steve, who was a brilliant man, you could ask him, he would tell you, answered, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. No word on the movement of the Titanic trifle dish, but the movement of the Titanic plates. So thus was born the idea of Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, named for great examples of Titanic intellect, usually from the right wing, that take place in the world at large. And of course, you know, there's always Titanic intellect out there because, you know, we got places like Fox News and various and sundry weirdo right-wing broadcasters. So we'll have some of that. I guess, you know, he's not grandfathered out. So, Comrade Kumquat gets included in this particular instance, becoming a Titanic intellect or a Titanic Tuesday nominee because of his response to the ongoing and getting worse hurricane disaster along the Texas Gulf Coast and heading inland, right? It's pretty, it's pretty much a guarantee that he'll do something like that. He and Melanoma and Little Boron took off in Air Force One today to fly down to Texas, where they were really not needed and really couldn't do any particular good, but did manage, of course, to cause a whole lot of people who would be doing first responder work, he managed to prevent them from doing that because they had to instead do presidential security detail work. Gee, thanks, Donnie. What a guy. Upon arriving, he displayed his ongoing penchant for making everything all about him. Naturally, of course. By declaring, and I'm not going to subject you to a sound a clip or anything, because I know it makes some people just bark at the moon. Doesn't do me any great good either, but, well, he went down to Corpus Christi, Texas, which, of course, got hammered, and which is, I think it's fair to say that it's impossible for them to even get into what we would call recovery mode yet. Right? So he went down to a fire station, or you know, a rescue location. I lied to you. I'm going to play the clip to you for you after all.
Thank you, everybody. I just want to say we love you. You are special. We're here to take care. It's going well. And I want to thank you for coming out.
When it comes to
back and operating immediately. Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
Yeah. Thank you. What a crowd. What a turnout. They showed up hoping to hear they were going to get helped. And instead, he betrayed his ongoing obsession with crowd size. I wish that was some sort of joke. I mean, I wish that was, I don't know, Alec Baldwin somehow mocking. It wasn't, no. What a crowd. What a turnout. You know, what a freaking baby. Yeah. The internet didn't much care for it. Because, you know, the internet is a thing. Right. And, of course, people are still suffering mightily. You know, in the more flood-affected areas, right? Oh, Jesus. This is... I presume, once again, as I did yesterday, I presume that... that you're well aware of most of the flood news. Things are, you know, not good. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Forgot that part, I think. And it's gonna stay brutal. For the foreseeable future. And, you know, some people help. And some people just don't. I will never fathom this one. This comes from the Department of Not Helping. Tom Llamas, L-L-A-M-A-S, Llamas. He works for ABC News. He anchors the weekend edition of World News Tonight. And, well, he was doing a stand-up. And he said, "We are witnessing looting right now at a large supermarket in the northeast part of Houston, and police have just discovered a body nearby. We informed police of the looting, and Coast Guard is flying overhead. Multiple officers are now on the scene." He tweeted that. But then, for some reason or another, he deleted his tweet showing that demonstrated that he was more concerned about food being stolen from a grocery store than he was with whether or not people were getting the help that they desperately needed in order to continue surviving. He has been the subject of some withering and well-deserved criticism. Now, Harvey made landfall in the area 4 days ago. You've got people who are without food. And when you start hitting the 3-day, 4-day mark without food, you know, the word starvation comes into play. And so there were people who were desperate for food who went looking for it. Remember Katrina? This is sort of that all over again. Remember the photographs that showed white people who had engaged in theft and described them as foraging for food, whereas there was a photograph of people of darker complexion and they were described as looters? This is that all over again. It's an embarrassment to good journalism, and it's a piece of personal judgmentalism, if that's a word, that really has no place in crisis coverage. Of course, then again, the question can be asked, because this is parachute crisis journalism. One can, I think, fairly ask the question whether having a bunch of millionaire for-profit media television journalists wandering all over the place, whether that actually helps or hurts. I mean, it's kind of in the same camp as whether or not it helps or hurts for the President of the United States to go down there and divert resources away from rescuing and life-saving and first responding in order to make sure that the President's physical person is safe and protected and guarded and what have you. And that's really the kind of question that people can only answer for themselves. There's no concrete answer to that. It's just how you feel about the issue. So this is not one of those great moments in journalism. And I'm sure that there will be more such. Well, there will be good moments and there will be not so good moments. While our attention has been focused on the Houston area, other things have been happening. A teenager with what is, of course, described as a troubled past, went on a shooting spree in a little town whose name always resonates with me anytime. Clovis, New Mexico. Teenager killed two people and wounded four others in Clovis, New Mexico, at the public library there. He had been in some trouble before, but this summer he done got himself baptized and was helping the church to raise money to send teenagers to youth camp. And then at the Clovis Carver Public Library, he walked in and blew two people away and maimed four more with his Freedom Protector. Chrissy Carter and Wanda Walters both worked at the library, and 16-year-old Nathaniel Jewett, J-O-U-E-T-T-E-T-T, ended the universe for them. He also wounded 10-year-old Noah Molina and his sister Alexis Molina, who was 21. 53-year-old Howard Jones went down in the gunfire as well. Alexis Molina and Howard Jones are both in serious condition as of today. The fourth surviving victim has been identified as Jessica Thron, aged 30. Yeah. No real explanations for why. Why it happened. If we really wanted an explanation, we could start by pointing out, well, that the National Rifle Association likes it this way. They are, after all, the nation's most powerful, most politically plugged in, most wealthy domestic terror organization. Clovis, New Mexico is shaken, to say the least. Multiple families are shattered. But you're just going to have these things happen in order to have freedom here in America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Right? Right. So that's something, you know, that else that's going on. I neglected to send out thanks for the folks who got us down to the fundraising goal that we have this evening, and I don't like to do that. I don't like to miss that, miss out on the thank yous. Thanks go out to our pal Joy, who kicked in celebration of her son's birthday, and he is a talented young man. Off to the beginning of his college career, and of course we also have a couple of subscribers on the 29th of the month. In particular, Terry in Massachusetts, and our buddy Ed in Dallas. Thank you both very, very kindly. Meanwhile, email rolling in. Matt in San Francisco simply observes, while visiting disaster zone, Trump tells Hurricane Harvey victims, "What a turnout, what a crowd." Matt observes, "What an asshat." Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But he's not going to... he's not going to stop. And the New York Times is normalizing his bizarreness by talking about how engaged he is. Oh, yeah. Um, Scott in San Diego observing stilettos to a hurricane disaster area. If that's not an example of a Titanic Tuesday nominee, I don't know what is. Yeah, Melanoma wore some serious stiletto heels. You know, maybe she changed into, like, sneakers on Air Force One. Maybe she left her sneakers on Air Force One last time, so she had to wear the, like, 6-inch porn stilettos to the plane. Or maybe they were going to keep her dainty feet up above the fetid floodwaters or something. You can't know. We can't know. It all doesn't have to be let them eat cake, you know, she as Marie Antoinette sort of. No. I mean, maybe people in Texas wanted, maybe they expected that people in Texas would want to see their queen, first lady, prancing before them in a pair of shoes that cost more than most of them make in a month. I mean, that's always a possibility. But, you know, I don't want to be perceived as engaging in any sexism here. So, you know, just to make things clear. You know what was interesting out of the photograph is out there. I saw one person remarked, worst Abbey Road impression ever. But what's really interesting is she's taking this really, without regard to whether she's wearing $3,000 pumps that were hand-stitched by little Italian children or whatever. She's taking this long stride next to Dolt 45, who's taking this wee tiny tottering stride. And I saw the video of it as they were heading out to the aircraft. And in fact, he was taking tiny little, and it sort of reminded me of how profoundly fearful he is of falling. And so he takes these little tiny steps. With the subject line, what do we call it? Steve in New York says, I've come to a conclusion. There are no words that sufficiently describe how bad and awful it is. I'm taking to calling him the worst thing I can think of calling a person. He's a fucking Trump. Carol Baker pointing out, as she got off the plane, it was the FLOTUS cap, the aviator shades, and the popped collar on the white blouse that made me laugh. She had to come with a label so he'd remember who she was. Oh my God, they made her a FLOTUS cap. Well, she's special. She is. Remember, she is the first presidential spouse in the history of the entire history of the Republic ever to take her clothes off in exchange for money. And that's saying something, because we've had some humdinger first ladies. We absolutely have. Was she still, Carol, did you notice? I mean, when she got off the plane, was she still wearing the CFMs, the CFM pumps? I don't know. Jim writing in, headgear, Trump, love those hats, must do lunch. Oh, do. Yeah, she was, okay, thank you, Carol. Because I saw the getting on, not the getting off. That didn't come out right, did it? The deplaning, I didn't see the deplaning, but yes, she was still wearing the CFM pumps when she got off the plane. And that's just what they were called. As No, they're not stripper pumps because they don't have like 4-inch platforms on the sole. They were elegant as hell. Okay. Jim Acosta got to nail a pelt to his door today. He interviewed Texas representing Randy Weber. And Randy Weber is, of course, a real Lulu. He's one of those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Republican, Trumpansy. I guess he'd qualify as a maggot, wouldn't he? A Make America Great Again Trumpansy scum from the Texas delegation. Oh, that one never gets old, Earther. Okay. Earther from the chat room. Come on, Bob. Cut Melanoma some slack. She struggled growing up on the south side of Chicago. South side of Chicago. Never mind. Yeah. Thanks, Arthur. I needed that badly. But anyway, Randy Weber is one of the 22 members of the Texas delegation in the House of Representatives. Oh, wait. Okay, so thank you. Carol just sent me the picture of the first couple getting off the plane. I don't know why Geezer Disgustus isn't wearing his MAGA hat. Apparently he's marketing a new one now that's simply marked USA. I guess he thought the gold braid, the scrambled eggs on the bill, and the CIC commander in chief too tacky. Who knows? But no, Melanoma, it was sporting the look of, who was it? Was it Kelly McGillis? Is that Days of Thunder or Top Gun with the popped collar and the glasses and the hat? Well, apparently it still plays really well with the maggots. Thanks, Sparky. There's a straight on shot of the FLOTUS hat. Somebody, he has to be reminded. Who are you? Okay. Right. But anyway, representing Randy Weber is one of the Texas Republicans who voted to screw people who suffered through Sandy back a few years ago. Sandy! Ferg does that really well. It's John Travolta. Jim Acosta over at CNN didn't let him get away with claiming that he voted to screw people from Sandy, but now, you know, somehow or another Texans are more deserving, and there shouldn't be any discussion over, because what he used, Ted Cruz, you heard the clip, played it here, of Ted Cruz being interviewed and saying, well, there was a lot of pork barrel spending in those Sandy bills, and we just couldn't, well, it turns out that was a lie, okay? That was a straight up, no kidding, lie. There was almost nothing inside those relief bills that could be called pork. There were two different bills. $9.7 billion were passed to increase the FEMA ability to borrow flood relief. And then in January of 2013, there was a $50.5 billion bill. And that was for people whose homes had been damaged and businesses that were all but wiped out. It went to do shoreline restoration, subway repair, commuter rail repair, bridge repair, tunnel repair. And municipalities were reimbursed from where they had depleted their rainy day funds. And so those were the bills that Republicans voted against. So this then happened, and it's kind of a, this is a good journalism moment. And should be, cherished, appreciated, because it's an example of how good journalism can be when it decides it wants to be, you know, good. Oh, damn it. I guess we're going to have moments like this sometimes. We'll get the little sucker loaded up yet. Hopefully. Yeah, someday we'll have a production staff. Maybe. Damn. All right, let's try it another way. The internet interweb tubes, well, brought to you by Frontier, are really awful today. Sorry for the buffering. Hopefully it will clear. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa also pointing out, hey, listen, 500-year flood or not, you got to stay fabulous if you're a member of the Trump douchebag brigade, hence the porn heels, damn it. Okay, so maybe we'll get this clip yet. It would be awesome if we could. Just because it's fun to, it's gratifying to see a journalist, you know, doing their actual no kidding job. Working. Obligatory Star Trek reference. Here we go.
He represents the 14th district, which is south and east of Houston and has been a very hard-hit area. Congressman, we were just talking about this area in Columbia Lakes. The levee there has been breached. What more can you tell us?
Well, Jim, our emergency response team had gone out 2 days ago asking everybody to leave that area because we knew the floodwaters coming at us were going to be horrific. And, of course, most people did evacuate. There were some who wanted to ride it out to the end. Now the Brazoria County Sheriff's Department, our great County Judge Matt Sebastian, and others are going down there, first responders, and making absolutely sure that people know what's happening and they're getting out. So they're very, very proactive at this point.
And why is it that you think some folks have decided to hold on? Just a few moments ago, we were talking to one of our reporters who said that there are some undocumented people who are worried about being picked up. because of their immigration status if they seek relief. I'm being told by DHS that's not going to happen. I suppose there's a variety of reasons why people don't want to get leave their homes at this point.
Well, absolutely. They want to stay. You know, Texans are resilient. We're used to hurricanes and some flooding down here. Now, this has been called the worst flooding event in American history now. But people want to stay close to home. They think they can ride it out. Texans are very, very resilient. But I don't think they anticipated the absolute magnitude of the rainfall. Harvey has now stopped Tropical Storm Allison in Texas for the most amount of rain dropped. I think the latest count now is 49 inches. So I don't think people anticipated that.
And Congressman, we have to ask you this. 4 years ago, you were opposed to federal funding for relief for victims of Superstorm Sandy. Why did you oppose that at that time? And do you think it's hypocritical, as some are saying now, for you to be seeking federal assistance for your area? Obviously, the people there need it. Nobody's disputing that. But in hindsight, do you regret opposing that funding for Sandy victims?
Jim, I was very clear at the time that there was additional measures thrown into that bill, the Smithsonian Institute. There was a couple of parks. There was $1 million for some upgrades, different parks and whatnot. So there was actually what I would call pork attached to that bill, which I did not believe belonged on that bill. I had that discussion with leadership at the time. I said, they told them, you take that off that bill, I'm good to go.
And what we understand, Congressman, from looking into this morning is that there really wasn't a very much pork at all in that bill. There have been a couple of fact-check reports to come out just today saying there wasn't really much of any pork in that legislation. There was some additional spending on other items, but it was very small with respect to and compared to the vast majority of that funding, which did go to disaster relief.
Yeah, well, but it was disaster relief for Yankees. They don't need the kind of relief that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Texans need. I mean, there's going to be... They ain't got refineries up there. They ain't got an oil and shipping industry. They ain't got all them pipelines like what we got. Yeah, we got... There's people in, there's corporate executives down here in terrible, terrible need.
Translating from the journalism speak, Arthur offers up, how do you feel about the notion that you're maybe a total asshole, Congressman? Thank you for the translation, Arthur. Much obliged.
Are you hopeful this time that people don't play politics with this sort of thing?
Absolutely. Look, I've been a proponent from day one, if you looked at my voting record, on omnibuses and continuing resolutions, with one exception, because it led to the oil embargo of the ban that we had in place in 73. I voted
at Honda, we believe even...
Oh. Now, stop that. Man, don't I despise pop-up ads. I don't care what Honda believes right now. And I didn't even start... I didn't touch anything to make the stupid ad run. Just what you get, you know? You were saying, Congressman Dickhead?
Should be passed on their merit and not simply joined with something else to make it palatable.
Right. But in a perfect world... I mean, obviously, things are going to be thrown into bills that you don't like. In hindsight, though, do you think you should have voted for that Sandy legislation? And do you maybe have some convincing to do with some of your colleagues? Or are you going to have to look some of your colleagues in the face from up in the Northeast and say, look, I know I voted against this back then, but I need your help now?
Well, we'll have that discussion. I think most of them are understanding that when you've got someone who votes against something for a particular reason. You may not have to agree with the reason, but I'm pretty easy to get along with.
Well, yeah, all they got to do is what I want them to do, and after all, you know, I got constituents who vote me to office, and they send me there to be that kind of an asshole, you know, to Yankees. And them Yankees understand. They understand down here we got to be a certain way, because we got a different culture down here. They will absolutely do. So they'll be understanding. They actually, what it comes down to is they're decent people up there, and I'm not. All right. So they're not going to behave to me like I behave to them, and that's most always the way it is in the Congress. You know, your Yankee congressman will say, "Well, we all Americans together." While down here behind the corn pone curtain, we recognize that we are not all the same kind of Americans. There's some Americans is better than other Americans, and we're the better Americans. Absolutely, absolutely. We didn't get our asses kicked all over the map 155 years ago. It's just so's Yankees could give us free stuff. I mean, that showed our mettle. It showed our courage, is what it done. Absolutely. Jesus, what a dick. But then again, of course. Who's surprised? Jason pointing out, typical morally bankrupt conservative. They look out for themselves and screw everyone else. Stephen New York pointing out, we don't want our money being wasted on heathens up there, what don't believe in Jeebus up there in New Jersey and New York. You know what New York's full of. Am I right? And of course, there's always Twitter. Here's a selection of some delicious moments on Twitter, because it's Titanic Tuesday, remember? Some delicious Twitter moments, courtesy of Carol Baker. Here's a maggot. Make America Great Again, Tarmpansy Scum. How come we never saw Obama helping the Katrina victims? Oh, that's right. He was golfing at that time. God, they're so proud of themselves when they type things like that. You know, with one hand. Here's another Trump. Here's another maggot. All caps. Thank you, Trump. Thus is how a real president leads. Where was Obama during Katrina? Probably golfing. Hashtag MAGA. Oh, he's a tricky one. Responding to a fairly well-known Twitter person named McSpocky, you are a nutcase. It was your Prez Obama who was golfing during Hurricane Katrina. Prez Trump has been very proactive in sending help before and now. Another maggot. And where was Obama when Katrina hit? Period, not question mark. Vacationing and didn't answer for 3 days? You lefties are all on crack. Yet another maggot. You're such a pig. Don't you remember Katrina when Obama was out golfing, vacation, and too busy to help Louisiana? And then, replying to at Barack Obama, will you please get lost, period. Not question mark. Where were you when Katrina hit? Oh, right, playing golf. Now you want to play president. Never again. Those are, unfortunately, real tweets. And as Carol points out, of course, Obama was also on the grassy knoll when Kennedy was shot. And I know he shot J.R. Probably took down Dr. King, killed Bobby, killed Malcolm X.
has caused no end of cases of psoriasis. Right. During Katrina. Please tell me I don't have to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. We do remember who was president during Katrina. We remember it wasn't Barack Obama. We remember that eponymous photograph of George W. Bush playing a guitar upside down. We remember the pictures of him out celebrating John McCain's birthday with him in Arizona while the lower Ninth Ward drowned. We remember all of that, don't we? Yeah. As Steve points out, yeah, exactly. Just like Obama was golfing back on 9/11.
Yep.
And look, don't be surprised at this stuff. The fish rots from the head, as the saying goes. It was along about the same time or thereabouts the Marmalade Mugabe. Love that one. Just love that one. Was telling. Well, he compared the drowning of Houston to water damage in one of his shitty apartments in New York. New York Times reporting that at Camp David, when he was talking to FEMA staff and members of the National Security Council, he said to water damage is the worst. We know it from managing our apartment buildings in New York. Water damage is the worst. Tough. Yeah, so a pipe bursts and you've got a little water damage in one of his shitty tenement apartments. And it's the same thing as, right, yeah, you got it. Whew. That's something. But like I said, the fish rots from the head. And so let's if it'll play, mind you, because for some reason we're having issues. There was another great moment over on Radio Rwanda. In which we found out, just how goddamn dumb they are. You know who Jesse Waters is, right? He's the jackass who used to ambush people for Bill Falafel O'Reilly back when O'Reilly still had a job. And Jesse Waters would go out and harass people trying to get in cars or take a bath or, you know, peep in windows. You know, really skeevy, creepy shit. Well, on Fox, you had a great moment in TV journalism. They were discussing just how weird, how bizarre things were turning out to be in Houston. Here's the audio. This is Jesse Waters speaking. You might want to get a hockey puck for this one. Just saying.
I've seen some amazing things out there just looking at television over the weekend. Alligators on people's back doorsteps. I saw a shark on a highway swimming
like
in the
Sharknado.
Water. Like Sharknado. I saw a hawk sitting in someone's taxi cab. Greg and I were saying, you know, the president was using the term biblical. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some really weird biblical things that are going on down there in Houston. I can't even imagine how I would be experiencing that as a guy from the Northeast, but I think Texas has it figured out.
Texas has it figured out, especially since by the time he was talking about it live on air, the business with the shark swimming in the water over the highway had been debunked as an internet hoax that actually went all the way back to Katrina. Yeah. I love it that Kimberly Guilfoyle, the Attack Blonde co-host, says, like Sharknado. No, sister. Sharknado is where the sharks are flying in the air. This is a shark in flood waters. And a biblical, because everybody knows there's all kinds of references all through the Old Testament to, yea, did then displease the Lord his God, and the Lord his God sent a shark to bite him into two bloody pieces. Right there in the Bible. Mm-hmm. You betcha. Because, of course, you know, facts mean nothing over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Not a damn thing. I know. So, you know, that too. And no, Marty, I've actually never seen an episode. I haven't seen Sharknado 1, 2, 3, 4, or 14. I just happen to know about it because it's, well, you can't help but know about Sharknado because it's not often that something that stupid actually comes. Well, okay, it happens every day, but. That was just that was shark jumpingly stupid. All right. So here we are at 2 minutes before the hour. There will be no fundraising tomorrow. There will be no fundraising on Thursday. So we have the next 2 hours to raise $320. 10 at 32, 32 at 10, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 2 at 160, 4 at 80, 8 at 40, etc. We got 2 hours to raise $320 to finish off the month of August, lick the Lithuanian, nudge the Norsky, and finish the month of August on schedule. So hopefully we'll do that. Thanks to Billable Rick for... getting us started with $10. Thank you, Billable Rick. I appreciate that very, very much indeed. We all do. Because after all, this program is available to anybody who wants to listen to it for free. Everything that keeps this program on the air is voluntary. And I don't, you know, like I've said before, I don't go down and cash a check from an organization that's controlled by sweet, lovable, cuddly, savior of common humanity, Pooty Poot, every couple of weeks. I don't do it. Doesn't happen. We don't have any big ad dollars, you know, coming in. Just a program, a progressive, liberal conversation program funded and fueled entirely by the people who want it to exist. And if you want it to exist, run over to headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute, fill out the very small, unobtrusive internet form, and put in whatever number you want to put in. Mr. Clooney, Mr. Reiner, Mr. DiCaprio, Mr. Soros, Ms. Streisand, Ms. Goldberg, Ms. Midler. Put in $10,000. And click the monthly, and then this thing will take off like a house of fire. We'll build a little video studio. We'll expand onto YouTube and all kinds of crazy stuff. And have big fun. It'll have a downside, of course. It'll bring to an end my days of doing naked radio. But trust me, if we ever go to video, that is something you do not. I promise you, you do not want to see. God, if we did something like that, I'd have bearded guys in mid-19th century garb standing outside the back porch with harpoons in their hand, saying, "From hell's heart I stab at thee." No. Ain't no way. So let's take a break, see if anybody wants to engage in conversation. If you do, the number is 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, on Skype. Okie doke. Seems fair. Of course, this being a Tuesday, the Green News Report is on its way. And I always look forward to that. Okay, Michael and Madison gets a jingle. Stop telling us what we want to see, Bob.
Yeah.
But I've got a bumper all lined up in honor of Jesse Waters. I've seen sharks swimming on highways. I've seen a hawk in a taxi cab. I've seen alligators on back porches. Oh, my aching back. But yeah. So all that's coming up. Just as soon as the damnable music player loads. You know, or not. You'll have these little glitches from time to time. Well, shoot. This is kind of annoying. Oh, we'll get there one way or the other, somehow or another. In fact, what we'll do is we'll just go straight to the... And damn it, this was a really, really good bumper. It made such good sense. It fit right in with all those things that Jesse Waters has seen. Oh, well. We'll just run over to the Green News Report, shall we? Let's do. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
It's Tuesday, August 29, 2017.
It is one measure of how life has changed here that, like these waters, the standard for what constitutes an emergency keeps rising in this city.
Green News Report special coverage. Hurricane Harvey causes long-term, widespread devastation across Houston and southeast Texas, and it's not over yet.
That story and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent Green News. News, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We've pledged our full support as Texas and Louisiana battle and recover from this very devastating and historic storm. There's probably never been anything like this.
You got that right, Mr. President, on several counts. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I must admit, the first I heard of Hurricane Harvey, then Tropical Depression Harvey, was from you on this Green News Report. You were earlier than most. Where are we now in this ongoing disaster as we go to air today?
Well, Houston remains paralyzed by nonstop rainfall and flooding caused by Hurricane Harvey, which made landfall as a Category 4 hurricane on Friday near Port Aransas, Texas. Harvey now ranks among the worst storms ever to hit the United States. Historic flooding has turned Houston, the nation's fourth largest city, into an inland sea. At least 9 deaths have been confirmed so far, and it is not over yet. National Weather Service forecasts that the slow-moving storm could dump another 2 feet of rain before it's done.
Another 2 feet of rain on top of the, about 2.5 feet that have already fallen?
Yes, these are unheard of numbers.
Yep.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has activated the entire Texas National Guard, and officials say first responders have rescued more than 3,000 people so far. FEMA estimates up to 30,000 people may require emergency shelters. In a Sunday press conference, Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner defended the decision to not issue mandatory evacuation orders, saying it wasn't clear where to send people to.
There was a lot of conversation about the direction in which Hurricane Harvey was going to go. No one knew which direction it was going to go. So it's kind of difficult to send people away from danger when you don't know where the danger is.
That's true. That said, we know that the danger was not to the north, and had they sent people to the north, they might have been able to get out of harm's way.
But logistically, it would have been difficult. Back in 2005, during the evacuation for Hurricane Rita in Houston, more people died in the massive traffic gridlock than from the storm itself. Houston's freeways serve as flood channels. Thousands could have been trapped on the freeways when the storm arrived.
True, and since nobody really knew that this storm was happening at all until about 48 hours before it ended up making landfall, yeah, I can't see how they would have gotten Houston's millions of people out of there in time or safely.
And keep in mind that these floodwaters are polluted. The Houston region is a hub for the petrochemical industry with extensive pipelines, refineries, chemical plants, and heavy industry. All of those facilities were inundated, along with sewage treatment plants. Regarding climate change, it will take time for scientists to determine the specific influence of global warming on this specific storm. But in general, climate scientists say global warming intensifies extreme weather impacts, like more frequent extreme rainfall events, and rising sea levels elevated Harvey's storm surge.
And it cannot go without notice that both scientists and activists have been warning, have been begging Houston officials and Harris County officials for years to do something about these flood concerns, the precise concerns, sadly, that have now come home to roost in Houston.
Yes, building codes, road construction, and flood mitigation in the Houston flood-prone area were not keeping up with the blistering pace of home building and real estate development. Developers shortchanged flood mitigation regulations and paved over some 30% of the regional wetlands that once provided natural flood control.
Where the switchgrass would have soaked up a lot of this water in any event, all of that is gone. It's now concrete.
Most Houston residents also don't have flood insurance. FEMA Director Brock Long on CNN on Sunday was blunt about the region's long road to recovery.
FEMA's going to be there for years, sir. This disaster is going to be a landmark event. We're setting up and gearing up for the next couple years.
And it's not just Houston. As we go to air, another tropical storm is brewing off the coast of South Carolina. And over in South Asia, at least 1,200 people have died from monsoon flooding across India, Bangladesh, and Nepal.
1,200 people?
So far.
If there's any bright side at all to what's going on in Houston, is so far the smaller than expected death count. That said, Houston's police chief told the AP on Monday that he's, quote, really worried about how many bodies we're going to find.
Indeed.
For much more on this story and all of the others we could not get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Every breaking wave on the shore tells the next one there'll be one more. And every gambler knows.
And of course, thanks as ever to Brad and Desi for the Green News Report. 12 minutes past the hour. And I'm gonna veer away from some of the more immediate flood type news for a bit of a digression. As is so often the case, the horrors that we saw, that the world saw come from the Third Reich, had American antecedents. For instance, there are very few people who, with any understanding of the 20th century and the Second World War in particular, don't recognize the name Josef Mengele. Among other things, he was the character upon whom Laurence Olivier's character in The Boys from Brazil, or Marathon Man, was based. The Nazi dentist. You remember the famous scene of Dustin Hoffman in the dental chair being probed by the Nazi dentist. Is it safe? Is it safe? I learned early on that dentists don't like it when you do that joke with them in the chair. Josef Mengele was a physician, and he was at Auschwitz. And he had a fascination with heredity. And so he used the poor, tormented souls at Auschwitz for human experimentation. He didn't give a good goddamn about the health of the people upon whom he was experimenting. He didn't care how much they suffered. He had these weird fascinations with twins and with people who had eyes that were two different colors, people with dwarfism and physical, just physical abnormalities. And so there was brutal, sickening
human experimentation that took place under Mengele's supervision. He was, in short, a monster. But, you know, all monsters don't have German accents. Some of them talk like this. We have turned our attention largely to the hurricane response in South Texas. And we have forgotten, for the time being, what was capturing our attention just scant weeks ago, when the neo-Nazis went on the march and killed a person and maimed others in Charlottesville. And it all happened because the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen and the skinheads and the bigots and the white supremacists, you know, maggots, objected to us finally, people in this country finally demonstrating some degree of sensitivity toward the descendants of people who were tormented by people memorialized in statues like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis, Stonewall Jackson, and various and sundry monuments to the Confederacy that, as we know from history, were mounted as a part of a counteroffensive to reinforce white supremacy in the pre-civil rights struggle South. We had that conversation last week with Dr. Phillips. Well, the memorials to Confederate monstrosities are not limited to south of the Mason-Dixie line. There's a statue, in point of fact, in New York City, in Central Park, no less. It is a statue memorializing a monster. The monster's name was Dr. J. Marion Sims. J. Marion Sims was born, of course, it seems, in South Carolina, but eventually moved to Alabama and became a physician. And is remembered in the medical literature and in the history of medicine as quite the innovator and quite the brilliant hand with a scalpel. If you've ever seen the Cinemax 2-season series, The Nick, you get a pretty good idea of what late 19th century, early 20th century surgery was like. And it was, to say the very least, brutal. James Marion Sims lived from 1813 to 1883. He is known in the literature, and when I tell you this, you're going to go, oh, yeah, this is not going to end well. He's known in the literature as the father of modern gynecology. Notice that modern gynecology has a father and not a mother. He developed a method, among other things, for repairing the vesicovaginal fistula, which is a complication from a particularly troublesome, a hard birth. So in Central Park in New York, there's a statue of J. Marion Sims. He looks downward and to his right, with his right hand across and his hand resting upon his sternum. He's dressed in the long coat, and it's a bronze statue, dressed in the clothing of the times. Revered father of modern gynecology. But you can't, in the time in which he was working, even then, human experimentation was not well taken. Among other things, he did the first successful gallbladder operation. But he had to figure out how to do these things with some sort of live subject. The female members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will also be gratified to know that he is the inventor of the vaginal speculum. Well, between 1845 and 1849, at his surgical practice in Montgomery, Alabama, which is dutifully marked with a historical marker, lauding his medical achievements, but sort of glossing over his methods. He developed these techniques. Now, the concept of anesthesia had recently entered the medical literature, but in performing his experiments, he didn't use any anesthesia. He simply experimented on African-American slave women without regard to any issues of consent. Anesthesia was publicly demonstrated in Boston, 1846. That was a year after he started his human experimentation on enslaved African-American women. Now, part of the reason that he didn't bother with consent was because, enslavement. Another part of it, though, is the mindset that obtained at the time that, those creatures, they don't feel pain the same way that white people do. And so now, there is a movement afoot. His statue has been vandalized. His eyes were painted a demonic red. Women with red dye on hospital gowns from the waist down have protested in front of the statue of Dr. J. Marion Sims. Ideological and spiritual grandfather of Josef Mengele. Rosanna Mercedes, age 27, a member of the Black Youth Project 100 in New York City, said, memorializing of imperialist slaveholders, murderers, and torturers like J. Marion Sims is white supremacy. We will no longer allow government institutions like the New York City Parks Department to passively allow symbols of oppression. There's a memorial to him in South Carolina as well. There's a memorial to him in Alabama. Seshat Mack, age 24, said, at best, J. Marion Sims was a racist man who exploited the institution of racism for his own gain. At best, he was a man who recognized the humanity of black slaves to use them for medical research about the human body, but not enough to recognize and treat their pain during surgery. The Sims statue stands at the corner of Fifth Avenue and East 103rd Street. And people in Harlem want it the hell removed. Back in 2011, because the protests have been going on that long, back in 2011, the city said they would put up a historical sign to provide some context for the memorial. It's kind of hard to provide context to a memorial to a man who committed medical torture. Mayor Steve Benjamin, the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, wants to take down the bust there. Interviewed by MSNBC, Benjamin said, there are some statues on our state house grounds that I find wholly offensive. The most offensive statue I find on our Capitol wasn't the Confederate soldier. It was J. Marion Sims. This statue should have come down a long time ago, said Elisa Waith of the memorial in New York City. Leave him to the history books. Leave history to the history books. There should be something truly great about a person to be permanently memorialized in bronze on the public commons. Can you imagine the screams? I know damn good and well the female members of the Horn family community congregation can. And I suspect with a certain degree of empathy, so too can the men. The screams. The horror. I mention this just to remind us that we were concerned with monuments to slaveholders. And when you are someone like me who has a deep and abiding interest in history, for whom history is not something that happened in the dim, dark, and distant past, but in fact, history is something that affects us each and every day in our immediate present. Sometimes it just leaps out at you. Or sometimes, as is the case with this, what I'm about to describe, it shows up in your dreams. Because, I mean, that's what happened last night. I had a dream. I think my brain keeps working in my sleep and tries to sort out problems that maybe my subconscious was picking at and never quite bubbled all the way to the surface. One of these days, maybe 10 years from now, maybe 100, maybe 500, maybe 1,000 years from now, if there's still a human species, and maybe they've already identified it out on the home planet of the nine-limbed amorphous blob people of Norblap 9. One of these days, a physicist is going to identify a force in the universe more powerful than gravity and more pervasive. One of these days, some great physicist is going to identify the universal force of irony. You know, we already have deified the goddess of irony here. She's the only deity we actually acknowledge. And she steps in from time to time to brutal effect. For instance, you know, she just tweaked representing Randy Weber right on the nose about his vote against Yankee hurricane relief, but his pleas now for relief in Houston, which the country should proudly provide, because we are one nation. But, you know, Jung got close to identifying that universal force when he talked in the early 20th century, I believe, about what he then called synchronicity. But he really didn't nail it down. I think this is a real force. Consider that, you know, we just had the Green News report there a moment ago, in which Desi Doyen said something that has been repeated so many times that it is probably etched into the gray matter of your brain now, that Houston is America's fourth largest city. Okay, number one is New York. Number two is Los Angeles. Number three is Chicago. Number four is Houston. Number five is Phoenix. Of the top five most populous cities in the United States, only one of them is actually named for a person. New York began life as New Amsterdam. Both are place names from Europe. Los Angeles, well, the city of the angels. Not named after any particular angel. Chicago probably comes from an old Indian word meaning river of death. Phoenix, well, we know what the phoenix is. It's a bird that rises from fire. But Houston is named after a person. Houston is named specifically after Sam Houston. Among other things, the only man ever to be governor of two separate states, Tennessee and Texas. Sam Houston led the forces that ultimately defeated General Santa Anna at the Battle of San Jacinto, that achieved Texans' independence from Mexico. The great moment that most people know from that that war is, of course, the defeat of the besieged defenders of the Alamo. The question, of course, is why there was a war for Texan independence in the first place. Well, there was a war for Texan independence because the country of Mexico outlawed slavery long before the United States even fought a war over it. And having outlawed slavery, this outraged white slave owners who had brought thousands of enslaved Africans into Texas. And so Sam Houston, for whom Houston, Texas is named, fought a war against the legal authority, namely the country of Mexico, in order to make the area of Mexico north of the Rio Grande River safe for slavery. Houston, Texas is, in effect, a monument to a slaveholder, a monument to an advocate of chattel slavery. The very name, Houston, Texas, is a great big giant reminder of the power that slaveholders had in early Texas. I remember when Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson declared that 9/11 happened because of lesbians and People for the American Way. I remember when Pastor John Hagee declared that New Orleans was struck by Katrina as an act of a vicious act by a loving God, because there were gay people and transgendered people in New Orleans. And those were just crazy statements. But I could not get away from the observation that perhaps the biggest monument to any slaveholder in the United States is the fourth largest city in the United States. And that we were talking about the removal of monuments to slaveholders immediately before this storm hit this great monument to a slaveholder. You know, there are a number of animistic religions the world over that see not only animals and plants and people as being alive, but that the entire planet itself is. That, in fact, the cosmos is. It's moments like this that make me wonder if maybe that's true. And by the way, it just as background, it's worth noting that the two reservoirs okay, thank you. The labor man correcting me in the chat room. Jacinto, Bob. I realize it would be Jacinto, but I sort of made the assumption that it's probably San Jacinto in Texas after all the battle was, you know, white people, English speakers. After all, we have a Cairo, Illinois, and a Versailles, Kentucky, and Houston in Georgia is not Houston, but Houston. You can't win. But another thing worth noting is that the two reservoirs, one of which got overtopped today, the two reservoirs to the west of Houston, the west and the southwest of Houston that protect the area from flooding, because it really wasn't a very good place to build a giant city. There was no planning worth a tinker's dam that went into it. It was just a matter of pure, unmitigated capitalism run amok. But Houston was no small affair by the time that the first third of the 20th century had come along. And so those two reservoirs that protect Houston were built in the 1930s. Those two reservoirs were built, in other words, in the FDR administration. You know, I got a note from Dr. John. He described Houston. He said, because, you know, he's got people there. And I just sent him a note saying, I know you got folks there. I hope they're okay. And Dr. John wrote back and said, another failure to plan and prepare. When are we going to get tired of this disaster theater and invest in infrastructure? Wouldn't that be making America great again? Well, it would, and once upon a time we worked on it. That idea was taken very seriously in the 1930s. When, under the New Deal, one of the single greatest, if not the greatest, period of public improvements took place in this country. And there were public works projects all over the United States. Because it was part of trying to provide work to people, work that desperately needed to be done, to people who desperately needed work. And so the projects were undertaken to try to protect Houston from flooding that had already bedeviled the region. And now, in 2017, we have found that it is finally with climate change beginning to take its toll. We have found that those reservoirs are insufficient to their task. A levee breached, total evacuation underway in another area. Randy in PA points out, but Bob, there's nothing but disaster theater on the news. What about the ratings? Well, that's why I'm talking about what I'm talking about here. There's only so many times you can stick a microphone in somebody's face and say, how does it feel to be part of a massive natural disaster? There's a finite number of answers to that question. Well, Fred, it certainly is disastrous down here. Look at the asshole from ABC News. We just narked on some people who were trying to steal food because they were starving. Because we've got to have law and order in America, damn it. Odds are long against, but you'd like to hope that, you know, when they called it into the police said, oh, you know, come on, fuck off, really? We're trying to save people's lives here. We're not going to taser anybody trying to get a jar of peanut butter and a goddamn loaf of bread. You're going to go home to your warm, dry bed here later this evening, bub. We're going to have this problem on top of us for a long time to come, so, you know, why don't you just fuck off? And they probably didn't do that. But a guy can fantasize. But we have ignored the needs of this country for coming up on, you know, just short of a century. 1937 was 80 years ago. And we have never had a public works project such as the ones that went on during the Great Depression since. We've had some pretty massive projects. The interstate highway system comes to mind. But we have not had a single-minded focus on infrastructure in 80 years. And like I said, irony is a powerful force in the universe, because all of this happens in Houston after months, literally, of having heard on the for-profit media that, well, Fred, if the president can just fuck people, a few tens of millions of people out of their health care, we can move on to the all-critical infrastructure bill. But if you dig down a little bit into that, you find out that Trump's idea and the Republican idea of an infrastructure bill is to sell the goddamned infrastructure to the highest fucking bidder, which is not an infrastructure bill. It's an auction bill. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to piss people off, but once again, I look at all this and I say, ha! Look, another thing we would not be talking about if we had not failed the fucking one-question IQ test back in November. Yeah, make America great again by selling America off, by the cubic yard, the mile of highway, the length of a bridge span. So this can be some sort of godforsaken libertarian, Ayn Rand, anarcho-capitalist wonderland, as if it's not already. Late-breaking Titanic Tuesday nominee, courtesy of Scott and Punky. Someone really needs to outfit Ann Coulter with a jacket having very long sleeves and buckles in the back and quickly lure her into a small room with inflatable wallpaper. She's obviously gone completely off the goddamn twig. Ann Coulter says she'd blame Hurricane on lesbian mayor before climate change. Scott Nooks notes it wouldn't be a devastating storm without someone trying to blame the gays. Yes, everyone, Ann Coulter's back at it. This time, the right-wing media pundit is using Twitter to insinuate that Houston electing a lesbian mayor is a more likely explanation for Hurricane Harvey than climate change. Yep, you read that right. Ann Coulter on Twitter, "I don't believe Hurricane Harvey is God's punishment for Houston electing a lesbian mayor, but that's more credible than climate change." The mayor in question is Houston's Anise Parker, one of the first openly gay mayors of a major U.S. city who served from 2010 to 2016. Coulter's no stranger to making anti-gay claims. She's previously said that gay marriage is not a civil right and stated that sexually active gay men should feel guilty about it. This is all the while trying to appeal to a subset of conservative gay white men. "Thanks ever so much for helping the victims of Harvey know where to place their blame, Anne." Yeah, for all I know, Scott's sitting in San Diego right now repeating his mantra from two Friday on the Front Porches ago. Maybe three. We're screwed. Let's run over and check in with Thomas at FYI Nation. What's happening, Thomas?
Hey. Long time no talk, and I apologize if I'm overmodulated.
No, you're fine. You're fine for the moment.
Okay, awesome. Just wanted to check in and let everyone know I appreciate everybody's well wishes while I was in the hospital. That it was very much, especially yours. And I'm on blood pressure pills, so that part is good. Thank God for the ACA, the one thing that hasn't been destroyed yet. The other thing, you're talking about infrastructure, and this kind of brings it home to me, because I live on a, now that I'm living back home in Connecticut, I live on a river bed. It's in a valley.
Oh, you live, are you saying you live in a floodplain?
Basically, yeah. And I'm on the other side of it on a hill. Basically, we're a valley, and it goes down, and right into downtown, there's the... That's where the river is. And in 1955, there was something called the Great Flood. And it was from a hurricane, I believe. I know it's not Gloria, but that's the one that comes to mind because I was in the 80s. But there was another hurricane that came through and flooded and did kind of like what is happening to Houston, to the valley that I live in. And when that happened, people got caskets running downriver. Literally, it was an epic disaster, just like, you know, what's going on Bangladesh and Nepal right now, where 1,200 people are dead and millions are homeless. But we're not hearing anything about that in the corporate RAN media, you know. And that happened just as at the same time. But it's not America, so whatever. But being close to home, we did what you're talking about, infrastructure. And they built a bunch of dams and levees that cradle the river going all the way down the valley now. They're ugly as hell, but we know that they're supposed to protect anything like the Great Flood from ever happening again, because I do live near New Haven, and New Haven is near the Atlantic Ocean, and so that's about 20 minutes away. So theoretically, something bad could happen.
Well, and of course, you also have to take into account, and it would probably be in your best interest to find out to what standards those things were constructed.
Well, it was the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at the time.
Yeah, I understand. No, I didn't say who. I said to what standards.
Well,
okay, the Army Corps of Engineers has screwed more people than it has helped in many instances.
That is true, and I agree with you. I'm hoping pretty good standards, and I say that only because it did withstand Hurricane Gloria, which is the one that I remember, and that was a pretty nasty one that we got here in Connecticut when I was a kid. And this is – we have a two-term Republican Trumptonian-like mayor right now whose third-term campaign slogan is putting taxpayers first, which translates into – not paying a dime in property taxes, but we're going to pull over any minority we can find. And we have a large minority population that drives through and lives in this town. And that being said, the area that... now, it's still in a... part that could flood, but at least it's on higher ground. But this brilliant Republican mayor wanted to build a brand spanking new because they like everything new and golden, like Trump. He wanted to build a brand spanking new police headquarters, even though we don't have the money to do that to fund the library. But who reads books anymore? We all have tablets. Even though it's like 100 years old and it's a beautiful building, never mind all that. So he decides not to do that and takes a slightly better approach and takes over a foreclosed vacant building for a senior center and the police force with a garage that's closer downtown, which makes more sense, right? But if the flood ever comes through again and the dams break, guess who's still going to be the first to get flooded? The first responders. Whereas you have right now the police force of my town that is in an older school building they requisitioned as to be the jail and the police force, and They wanted something newer, something more modern. Well, it's two stories up, but that doesn't help anyone when we get flooded. If this, you know, climate change that Trump thinks is, you know, done up by China, trying to screw us, happens again, and happens in Connecticut, and happens to Ansonia, we're going to face the same thing if you're right about the dams and levees, or if they have to open them up, just to let the, you know, like in some cases they had to do just to try and stop them from going batshit crazy in Houston.
Right.
And I'm really worried for my town and my first responders. Which, by the way, this dumbass president has not thanked once. He's thanked Greg Abbott. He's thanked both of the senators. Really great people. I love you, Texas. Held up the Texas flag. Yesterday, Greg Abbott.
Well, he thanked the really tremendous crowd for coming out in Corpus Christi. Don't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that. And I don't know if you know, FLOTUS has her own hat now.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that.
I came in a little late. My apologies, you know. My mother always said I was a late bloomer. That being said, it frustrates the hell out of me exactly what you're talking about, where government and governance has been made to be unpatriotic, and taxes have been
Beyond that, mm-hmm. And this is a historical fact, Thomas.
Yep.
The founding document of this country is the Constitution, and it begins with the statement, "We the people."
Yes.
In other words, this is going to be a government that is run on concepts of popular sovereignty. But beginning with people like Strom Thurmond in 1948, and continuing through people like Lester Maddox and George Wallace in 1968,
there was a determined effort made, and of course, all three of the men that I just mentioned were vicious segregationist racists. There was a determined effort made to change the attitude of the American people to one of open hostility toward the government of the United States and make the government from a we into a they.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference. If it's our government, then we are responsible for it. But if it is a them or a they or an it, then we are separate from it and are more easily persuaded to try to destroy it. And so racism motivated the likes of Strom Thurmond and Lester Maddox and George Wallace. If there's a hell, they're all burning in it. And it begins a process that proceeds along a continuum through Richard Nixon's vicious Southern strategy to leverage the hatred of white Southerners, and continues through Ronald Reagan saying the nine most dangerous words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." And saying things like, "Government isn't the solution, government is the problem." So that you now in 2017 have a populace that has an open hostility toward the government, which they themselves are responsible for. And you've got vicious, ill-intentioned pukes like Grover Norquist. And this would be a good time to, just like at Katrina, this would be a good time to remind people that, well, it was Republicans like Grover Norquist who said, "We want to make the government small enough to drown in a bathtub. And here we are looking at Houston. And guess what? They succeeded."
No, you're absolutely right. And your point, let's not forget, Bill Clinton came out and after he ran as a populist, said
the era of big government is over.
So the Democratic Party also took on that mantra because they thought it was a winning mantra when it is a loser. And anyone with any common sense knows that. And that's why so many people went and flocked to Bernie, because they know that together, and Tara Devlin says this all the time, together we win. Because when everybody has some skin in the game, God, I sound like Dr. Ben Carson. I think I'm going to shoot myself. But when everybody has some skin in the game and everybody has to work together, they can help. I mean, the only beauty I've seen in the news coverage of what's going on MSNBC and some of the other networks are the people of Houston who are just saying, "You know what? I'm going out and helping. I don't care who they are. I'm helping." Now, I did see one report, some moron with a Confederate flag helping black people. I don't understand that. That just makes no sense to me, and I don't know if that was even true or not. Maybe you can confirm that better.
No,
than
it,
I
was,
can.
It was an MMA fighter, a black guy, who went and rescued a family. And the guy insisted on bringing his Confederate flag with him.
Okay, all right. So I got it confused, which doesn't surprise me. But, of course, you know, you're getting rescued. Leave that alone. But I do want to commend the people of Houston for one thing. I have noticed almost no animals abandoned. At least not a lot of reports of animals being abandoned during this.
No, there are, and there are examples of individual heroism. There's the guy who owns the chain of stores in the Houston area furniture stores, and he's opened his furniture stores to refugees from the storm, so that they've got it, and they're literally sleeping on his demonstration mattresses. And that's tremendous. The single largest grocery store chain in Texas, H-E-B, has set up mobile kitchens and is trying to, you know, get people fed. Then there's Best Buy.
Oh, Jesus, I saw that story, yeah.
Yeah, Best Buy, the Cypress, Texas Best Buy, got stone cold busted for price gouging, charging $42.96 per case of bottled water. Best Buy tried to explain it away, saying, well, this was obviously a terrible mistake. It happened because a clerk made the mistake by multiplying the price of a single bottle of water times 24 instead of just a per-case price. Well, look, that only became a mistake once they got caught. Dasani was going for $42.96 a case, whereas what the sign described as a limited supply of Smart Water was going for $29.98 a case. As soon as Best Buy's stock went down by 11%, then suddenly Best Buy put out a statement, "Well, this was a terrible mistake, and it was an obvious mistake, and it was one of our goddamned underpaid clerks doing some bad ciphering. That's what it is. And please stop saying terrible things about us. The Best Buy in Cypress, Texas, is closed due to the flood now, so nobody can go in there and even buy our $40 cases of bottled water, bastards."
What the hell? They sell appliances and electronics. What the hell are they doing?
No, but I mean, everybody sells bottled water now. If I walk into Kohl's, there are bottles of water for sale at the cash register that are guaranteed to be from pristine Wisconsin water sources, because Kohl's is out of Wisconsin. And everybody sells water.
No, you're right. I don't get out. You know, I'm your favorite hermit, Bob. So I don't get out unless it's to the hospital. So you're right on that. But I'm glad you're talking about this, because back to infrastructure, and you're right about their bill. The infrastructure bill is exactly that. A privatization auctioneering bill to the highest bidder, and because
it's a fire sale, it's a bankruptcy liquidation. Everything must go. Prices slashed. Get your own interstate highway system cheap.
Yeah, and he's telegraphing it, because we're going to do it quickly, and we're going to do it fast. And whose idea would this be? But Mike Putz from Indiana, because most of it's toll. You have a choice. You either go through the toll or you go through the regular federal highway system, and 90% of it, I believe, is toll. And that's foreign owned. I believe
you're right.
You know, and that, you're absolutely right. And some prince somewhere in some far-off country that we don't know is going to buy it at fire sale prices and maybe or maybe not maintain it. And does he really give a damn on whether or not we survive? Not really, I don't think. Because what does he have to gain?
Right.
But I'm glad I got a chance to talk. I don't get to do this very often, and this has been great. And thank you for letting me on. I do want to mention I am kind of being corporate media like we have, but
Are you going to be an establishment shill?
No. My show has a dear friend who's in Houston, outside of Houston. And he's coming on to talk. We're going to actually be talking about tomorrow on the show about what could have been done better and the whether or not there should have been an evacuation process in place earlier and things of that nature. And it's with a former regular host of ours, and he lives in Houston, and he used to, ironically enough, drive by to go to work Joel Osteen's church. So this should be a very,
yeah, which is going to be opening up for refugees just any minute now.
I'm sure they're readying they use chairs, they don't use pews, but I'm sure they're getting it ready any minute. By the way, the Muslims are already doing it, acting more Christ-like than Joel Osteen. Gotta love it.
Well, of course they are. Of course they are. But people don't realize that they're going to get their heads lopped in their sleep because ISIS.
Oh, yeah. And the women and the men are going to be separate, but eh.
Yeah, I know.
But on that note, I'm going to let you go and let somebody else join in the fray and the fun. And thank you, Bob, for letting me on. It's always a pleasure to get a chance to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. You take care, Thomas. I hope your health continues to improve.
So do I, because I like being able to punch back.
Right, and it's fun being a neoliberal shill.
Right?
Yeah. See you, Thomas. Bye. Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. Note coming in from Kim in New Jersey. We the people. Really, Bob? It's a myth. The we was actually wealthy white landowners, right? The founding fathers showed us what they really meant by giving us the Electoral College. What, three or four times so far and counting? We have been royally screwed. And there, yeah, look, there's a ton. Oh, you have so got to download Dr. Bill's program from today. If you want to understand the degree of hypocrisy that was at work in the creation of the Constitution, you got to get Dr. Bill's podcast from earlier today. I mean, I produced and just sat here with my little ears glued to the speakers. It's fascinating when you actually know how this country came into being. But while I understand Kim's point, it's an aspirational goal, not an operational one. Just like democracy in the United States has never been operational, but only aspirational. And it's something to work toward. It's not even something to maintain. It's something to achieve. Okay? Scott tells me, actually, Joel Osteen today decided to open his megachurch to hurricane victims. Nice to hear that Pastor Megachurch Happy Face finally stepped up and started emulating the Jesus he claims so deeply worship. Sad that it happened as a result of massive public pressure and shaming rather than his instinctively knowing it was the proper thing to do. Well, I mean, they're going to have to replace the carpets and everything after you have all those, you know, all the heathens in. It's not going to be nice in there anymore. I mean, he knows what happened to the Superdome, right? Yeah. 13 minutes past the hour. We have raised beyond the $10 that Billable Rick kicked in, not a nickel. So it looks like we will finish fundraising for the month of August down by $320 minus whatever happens in the next two nights with the overnight crew. If you'd like to make that number smaller, it would be massively helpful if we could. We got $320 to raise to finish out the month of August, and tomorrow and Thursday, as I promised, are fundraising-free horn holidays. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd. Yo, Todd.
Bob, how's it going?
Ah, it's going. You know, I'm not flooded, so I got it real good. As compared with a whole lot of other people in the country,
you probably do. Very devastating. I really was avoiding the pictures until today. The radio was enough. And, you know, I saw the pictures, and I just couldn't look anymore. It's just beginning. This is like the, I think the smart people are saying this is going to be years in recovery.
Well, if levees start going, we're entering what we might call the Katrina phase. Because remember, the vast majority of the destruction didn't happen from the hurricane with Katrina. It happened after the civil infrastructure failed.
Exactly. And that infrastructure, that was the impetus for my call tonight, because I really liked what you were saying about the infrastructure, because I'm telling you, I was highly upset when the Mussolini, Marmaduke, Orange, whatever his name is, when he started bringing up the topic of infrastructure, because that ridiculous Congress wouldn't even give Obama the time of day when he was trying to get an infrastructure bill through. And the thing is, if you've ever lived in the Northeast, and I'm just using this as an example because it's something I'm familiar with, if you commute to work, you know, you might commute from a neighborhood. You're going to take a train or a bus. You know, there's a lot of bridges. There's a lot of railroad trestles in cities. And, you know, I have nothing else to do. A lot of people don't. You look out of the window. So you always look and see these I forget the name, but it's the year that structure or building was built. It's usually in the corner. Cornerstone,
yeah.
You know, and it's really interesting because a lot of those trestles were built. You can see 1932, 36. That was WPA stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So these things are so crumbled. You know, and this was years ago. I've been here for a decade or so, so. This was then, and not much has happened, but you could actually see the street through the lattice of a lot of these trestles, and they're still in use. So it's kind of insulting when, you know, they're even entertaining it, but not to sell it off, because that's bullshit. But see, that goes right back. I hate this mantra these people say, well, he's a businessman. We need a businessman. And I'm thinking, no, we don't. And I like what you said, and you said, we the people, because remember, that's what it's about, we the people. You know, the first rule of business is to, reward the stockholders, make a profit. You know, that's not what government is. Government is supposed to help the people. And if you go over budget sometimes, that's okay. You know, it's not great to have it all the time, but, you know, that's what the federal government is for. It's like the glue that keeps the states together. Otherwise, we wouldn't be the country we are. You know, that's just the way that I see the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. And I get very offended when these people talk this shit, because it's just vultures. They're evil. They are just, and they if you're not evil like they are, they call you a sucker, or they treat you like a sucker, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, or say that you don't understand that the free market is the underpinnings of all of our other freedoms, that and the Second Amendment.
Oh, God, you got to go there. Yeah.
But, I mean, you're sitting there in South Carolina. I know where you are. You know from disaster, because it wasn't that long back that you got to experience your own.
Exactly. That's why I said, do you understand that a lot of that stuff will never be rebuilt? Some of those bridges are not going to come back. It's incredibly – we're still recovering. I was just out of that flood area. It rained for 3 weeks, and then we had the storm after 3 weeks of rain every day. I mean, every day. Then the storm came, and the flooding was unbelievable. It was
that's something that nobody's talking about along the Gulf Coast. I got people down there, so I happened to just hear by virtue of conversation. Along the Gulf Coast, it has rained almost continuously all summer long. So everything's already saturated. What's happening in Houston? What's happening in Houston is happening to a place that's already sopping, soaking wet. So the water can do nothing but rise.
That's the danger. That's called supersaturation. That means it runs off of grass. It runs off of anywhere where it's supposed to be accepted.
And when you get 50 inches of fucking rain on top of that, bad things will happen. That's how come that one reservoir got overtopped early this morning.
I don't know what to say about that. I'm frightened to even do the Google and see like what neighborhoods might be impacted by that, because that's a big deal. If you've ever been looked at the spillways of a reservoir, and they said they were going to be wide open until further notice or until September something. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That's kind of frightening. I mean that.
But you know, and we can start there and we can work our way backwards, Todd. As human beings, we always have shown a predilection for liking to build, you know, near water. Because it depending on the level of the technical development of the culture, you know, it's access to food, it's access to transportation, it's in some ways it's a protective barrier against attack. I mean, I could show you, for instance, the Etowah Mounds in not far from you, over in Georgia. Those things, that place has a long view on three sides, and it's the back of it is the Etowah River. So it was protected.
Right.
There's a mound along the Natchez Trace in Mississippi. You got the same thing. You've got a long view of everything around you, and you got water at your back and a bluff. So you know, you're protected. There are reasons for building near water, but sooner or later, it will also probably bite you in the ass.
Yep.
And so, for instance, people said of New Orleans during Katrina, well, who in the hell builds a city below sea level? Well, the original city of New Orleans wasn't. The Vieux Carré, the French Quarter, is actually the highest ground in the town. But as it expanded, it, by definition, had to expand into lower ground areas.
Because, yeah, they drained the swamp.
Because it was growing. And it's that lack of planning. I mean, if you really wanted to get serious, because, see, climate change is real, and inside a couple of hundred years, there won't be a Houston, Texas. That's what makes some of this an act of rather sublime futility. I'm not saying rescuing people, but, you know, as soon as the cleanup's done, whatever, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, 10, 15, who knows?
Right.
People are going, well, you know, we're back to normal. Until, you know, another 500-year flood happens inside of 20.
Yep.
And these things are going to keep happening. And eventually, 100 years, 200 years, whatever, there won't be a Houston. Just like there won't be a New Orleans. There won't be a Mobile. There won't be a Panama City, a Destin, a Pensacola.
Miami.
There won't be a Tampa. There won't be a Miami. There won't be a Charleston. There won't be a Wilmington. There won't be a Philly. There won't be a Boston.
Nope.
And you know, if there's a New York will be Venice, and everybody will be entering by boat in the third or fourth story. Climate change is real. And as the brilliantly invaluable Joe Rahm pointed out over at Think Progress, every part of Hurricane Harvey has been made worse by climate change.
Well, this is what, if to the people who have been listening, this is exactly what had been predicted, superstorms like this. This is just unbelievable. That rain, did you see the darkness on the radar? I mean, this is what the folks are saying. If you were listening, not you, but I don't see how these people deny what is obvious now. This is the new norm.
And the parachute disaster journalists, I'm afraid, are going to have to start shifting over to New Orleans because they got terrible storm pump problems. You know, just the ordinary pumps that pump away the water when there's a thunderstorm. I saw that personally when I was down there, and some of those are just flat out of commission. Mitch Landrieu,
well, you know,
Mitch Landrieu, who is, of course, a notorious neoliberal and establishment shill, Mitch Landrieu marched in there and started firing people and getting rid of people because the department that that manages things like pumps for storm drainage
right.
is almost an autonomous sinecure of government. All right.
They don't have any oversight. They just do their own thing.
Yeah, and they were, and that storm came and literally flooded the city 2 days before Agnes and I got there.
Oh wow!
And people were going, "What the? This isn't supposed to happen."
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that a whole bunch of the pumps just didn't work. Some of them weren't even turned on.
I'm looking at
an early map for Harvey that was showing 6.39 inches of rain for New Orleans.
Listen, that kind of infrastructure has to have a maintenance schedule. That's required. I have no idea how often for that particular. Obviously, I don't. But I'm just saying, I do know that there is a schedule for anything like that. You're supposed to test it. Make sure everything works every cycle, whatever that cycle is, whatever the legislature or whoever makes the law for that has deemed. There are regulations for that. Unless they can't not have regulations for that. That's crazy. But what you just said, there was a caller of Washington Journal yesterday, and she mentioned the same thing. She said, "I'm worried." She called from New Orleans. She said, "I'm worried because nobody's talking about it, but our pumps aren't working." That's exactly what she said. Older lady. Well, she sounded old.
Right. And see, we've got friends of the community in New Orleans, and I'm worried about them.
You should be. Did this thing pick up?
This map I'm looking at here from, yesterday was showing Houston getting 22 inches of rain and New Orleans getting 6.3. I think that number's gone up.
Yeah.
But 6.39 inches with failing pumps is enough to create a disaster. You don't want to give up on somewhere like Houston or New Orleans, and nobody's going to. But the fact of the matter is, these are not places that admit of massive human populations. The only reason there are massive human populations here is because of capitalism.
Right.
Because, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is.
That's where the money is. And it's harsh to say. I hear people make the argument, and if I had land near, I don't know what I would do. However, at some point, you have to realize this is the norm now, and it's just going to get worse. Because even if we stop emitting everything right now, there's things in the system.
There's stuff you can't prepare for. There's stuff that you can't prepare against. The engineering doesn't really exist. All those little barrier islands and the bayous and everything that are supposed to absorb storm surges are gone because they've been paved over. Okay?
They've been paved over.
I mean, the beautiful beach area that I love there in Alabama, those are barrier islands. And they're like shock absorbers developed geologically, sort of a geological evolution. They develop to suck up some of that damage. But when it's nothing but 30-story or 15-story high-rise condos all the way down the beach, the surge slams into them and just carries the beach away. And it doesn't absorb shit.
It's a fight against, because capitalists, there's only so much beachfront area resort. I mean, because I've been to Key West, Hilton Head, all that kind of stuff. It's a big deal, right?
Oh, and privileged people want to live there.
They want to live there. They don't care. And they buy their own generator. Look, they will stay there. They will stay in that house. They got generators. But the thing is, it's not going to work. In the long run, it's just not going to work. But I'm thinking about these masses of people. Now, look at all – we don't even know how many people have been displaced yet. We really don't. But every time this happens, and it's going to happen again, and we're just getting started. You know, this is going to go on until November. Okay, we're just getting started with the storms. Then, but that to move that number of people and to relocate all those families, which is going to have to happen because you can't live. First of all, and think about the disease. My God, we've got the Zika, the Ebola, everything's popping off. Man, come on, well, MERS is off. Okay. MERS is out of control. I know people who have MERS. MERS is real. That woman next door to me had MERS. And I'm going to tell you.
Brain-eating bacteria. Remember when Texas was having a problem with brain-eating bacteria a year or so
shit,
ago?
You're right. You couldn't jump in. We had to jump
in.
On top of that,
there's a Superfund site that's underwater now.
Mm.
And on top of that, all of these refineries are underwater. And so that's just setting free a toxic soup of God knows what. Like I pointed out last night, there are already reports of people in the fence line communities being sickened by noxious gases in the air from these refineries and chemical plants that, for all intents and purposes, have been abandoned.
Damn.
And that's the entire Gulf Coast. I mean, I spend a lot of time talking about the sacrifice zone that is Appalachia, but you know what?
Right.
When it comes to a sacrifice zone, you got to get up awful early in the morning to out-sacrifice the Gulf Coast.
I think they're done.
And the thing is, none of these communities, none of these places where these toxic plants are next door to, you know, gated mansion communities. They're next door to poor folks' homes. You know, when I stood on the, when we went to New Orleans, we took off down the highway well before we got to New Orleans, because we wanted to go first to the, Agnes she was accommodating me. We wanted to go to the site of the Battle of New Orleans because I'm a history freak.
Right.
And got down there, and lo and behold, that area where it is, Chalmette, is just surrounded. All you can see is industrial plants and factories and stuff all around it.
Right. Look, that's what the corporations do. That's called environmental racism or classism, because usually they place, like in Philadelphia, the refinery, they have a lot of oil refineries in South Philadelphia, and they abut this place called Grays Ferry, which has been notoriously violent ever since those refineries went up. You know, because they produce a lot of lead, and when people are around a lot of lead, they display aberrant violent behavior. There's all kinds of studies on that. So it's messed up. But I really think the environmental power corporate elite, just like they don't give a damn about where you live, the people, they could care less about the people. They don't need you anymore because they only need five people to do what 20, whatever, the equation is off now. The same thing on the Gulf Coast, they have given that up, I think. This is why, I mean, after Katrina, you could see that area, they're just going to give it up to industrial, like, semi-hazardous activities. You know, chemical manufacturing, the oil will still be there. Anything nasty and dangerous, because that's all it's going to do now is flood and be nasty and stink. And wait till that stink sets in, like near the Meadowlands, when you got all that conflagration above, and the waste and the oil and the dead fish. Oh, man, this is just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And if, it, you know, and this is where, probably going to get a little grief for this. But this is where, if you had some sort of ability to insist that people engage in certain behaviors, you would actually, and I mean, I know a little bit about this because Central Appalachia, the sacrifice zone here, has been deliberately depopulated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
to make the area safe for the coal industry and the gas industry.
Right. Nobody can complain. Nobody's there, right?
Right. And the depopulation memo actually exists. I've read it. I know the guy who wrote it.
Oh, my God. See?
And they said, you know, we're gonna leave just enough in place to be like firefighters and nurses and teachers and doctors and lawyers and stuff. But everybody else will get out, and the only people that are going to be left are going to be the old and the sick, and they'll just die.
That's kind of close to genocide.
Oh, yeah, it is. But if you look at it from a planning standpoint, if there was some way to do it, you would actually deliberately, and not in that way, depopulate some of these coastal regions and let them return to nature. Because, there are just some places that are not meant to be densely populated. I mean, you know what a history nerd I am, Todd.
Yeah.
I think about the very origins of cities and the rise of agriculture. You know, I'm talking about Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates. Nineveh, Sumer, Uruk, from which we get the word Iraq. Well, back in the day then, when they decided to settle down and build cities, and, you know, Babylon develops, and it was a marvel. There were really smart people. I mean, I was reading just the other day some little piece of cuneiform tablet that was just laying around. Some people got around to translating it. How good are you at math?
I'm not math. I'm good at Batman.
Okay, well, dig this. It turns out it's a trigonometric table that is calculated on a base 60 mathematical system.
Base 60?
Base 60 with these massive... and it provides intensely precise...
Wait a minute.
Intensely precise methods... for calculating things like pyramids.
All right, we use base 10, you know, but how can you do base 60 without the help of electronic calculator, you know?
Well, they
know
did. They had mud bricks and little reeds that they pressed into wet clay. That's how they wrote.
I'm familiar with what you speak.
But look it up. I mean, you know, the Mayans used a base 13 system.
Oh, my God. You know what? I wanted to ask you this question. It kind of dovetails with what we're talking about. Do you remember this show?
Well, hold on. Time out. Let me just finish.
What happened? I'm sorry.
So what happens, they build these magnificent cities, and, you know, we're used to looking at maps of Mesopotamia, and it's all this arid, dry place. You know, it's fucking desert.
Right. Sure.
Well, there was a time when that entire area was green and blooming. Because they discovered the principles of irrigation. But then irrigation caught up with them. And what happens when you over-irrigate, and folks in Australia or any heavily irrigated area can tell you, you eventually salinate the soil so that it won't grow shit anymore.
Well, that's what, right, you have to flush it. Like when you use hydroponics, you got to flush.
You know, it bit them in the ass. And the thing is, even under the best of circumstances, with the best of planning, you're always going to have problems when you start trying to concentrate human populations. You know, if the nine-limbed, amorphous blob people from Norblap 9 finally write our history, they're going to say, these dumbasses never managed to figure out that you can't cram people together in one space and expect to succeed for very long. Because you can't. When that history is written, it may be that the single most successful period of human habitation on this planet was when we were hunter-gatherers. We know for a fact they had more leisure time. They had an excellent diet. And they were, I guess, relatively happy, except for when they had to club somebody in the head and throw them in the volcano or something. But you get my point. But I just wanted to point that out. And we've got this vast country that most of which is not fucking inhabited. It isn't even farmed. And yet we, you know, we're like, as a people, we're like a bunch of junior high schoolers at a dance. Everybody's all clustered together.
Scared to go out and branch out. Like, I don't know that group. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is a huge country, honest God.
And,
is,
you know, we talk about climate change. Yeah. Desi pointed it out, and Devin just pointed it out to me. One third of the nation of Bangladesh right now is underwater. And not too long from now, it'll go underwater, and it will stay underwater. A hurricane of the sort that Harvey is, if that hit South Florida right now, or if that hit Tampa on the other side, it would be far worse than even what we're seeing in Houston. And all this comes against the backdrop, Todd, of a president who says that climate change is a cruel hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to destroy our ability to manufacture shit. If the man is not removed from office, we are. We're done.
It's complicated. It's complicated now because I believe what these people, what you've said, other people said, his followers are stalwarts. They're woke, except they're woke in the wrong way, because you know they have a weird sense of being, you know. But they're armed, they're dangerous, and they're going to be upset. But I think that it looks like there's trouble ahead, because there's so much illegality. Just as a layman can see it, even before it goes through the legal process, it's just obvious shit. You know, they couldn't wait to start stealing the whole family. It's like, oh shit, they got wheelbarrows. They went to goddamn Walmart and got wheelbarrows. They were like, oh, we're getting ready. You know, they're just trying to loot the place. And it's catching up with them in the money. I mean, I don't understand why he thought he could. Well, he's crazy. That's why he thought that, I suppose.
No, he's not crazy. He's not crazy, Todd. He is upset. He is controlled by his own avarice. A man who is nothing. I mean, there's nothing to Donald Trump except avarice, except for the fact that Marcus Licinius Crassus was intelligent. I can't help but think of him. Marcus Licinius Crassus was the wealthiest man in ancient Rome. I mean, we're talking about could buy Donald Trump for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth and never feel it, okay? We're talking about rich. He may actually be the richest man the world has ever known. And he insisted on going to war against the Parthians because he convinced himself that not only was he rich, he was a great general because, well, hell, he put down the Spartacus Rebellion and crucified 2,000 slaves all the way up the Appian Way. Good for him, right? That made him, he was a great general. So he marched his ass off to Parthia, got his ass whipped, got his legions destroyed, and was captured. And the way the Parthian king dealt with him was to look at him and say, I am told you cannot get enough gold. Well, you're finally going to get your wish. And they killed him by pouring molten gold down his throat.
Because, that sounds highly unpleasant.
Because there was nothing to him but his avarice. There was nothing to him but his greed. Look at Trump. He sees the flooding of the entire Texas Gulf Coast region, and he says, "Well, oh, that's tough. That's tough. That's tough. There's nothing worse than water damage in one of my tenement apartments."
Bob, did you see? Was it me, or did you see? He was still in campaign. He was in rally mode. It was not appropriate I felt like he was still in his rally mood when I heard him speak today. When he arrived in the Houston area,
look at this crowd! What a tremendous crowd! Thanks for coming out.
Right. Again, with the come on, man.
And if he is not removed by peaceful legal means from office, our country is done. And to a certain extent, this is kind of breaking news. And it's a good thing. It is being reported that he reiterated his goddamn stupid little transgender ban, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, Marine General, according to USA Today, issued a statement in which he said he was suspending Donald Trump's order.
Whoa. Oh, okay. In 1 week, we got Rex Tillerson and Mattis openly defying the president's course of action.
Mattis said this in specific. The Department of Defense has received the presidential memorandum dated August 25th, 2017, entitled Military Service by Transgender Individuals. The department will carry out the president's policy direction in consultation with the Department of Homeland Security. As directed, we will develop a study and implementation plan which will contain the steps that will promote military readiness, lethality, and unit cohesion with due regard for budgetary constraints and consistent with applicable law. That's a big one, consistent mm-hmm. with applicable law. The soon arriving mm-hmm. senior civilian leadership of DOD will play an important role in this effort. The soon arriving, that means, not appointed yet. The implementation
right.
plan will address accessions of transgender individuals and transgender individuals currently serving in the United States military. Our focus must always be on what is best for the military's combat effectiveness, leading to victory on the battlefield. To that end, I will establish a panel of experts serving within the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security to provide advice and recommendations on the implementation of the President's direction. Panel members will bring mature experience, most notably in combat and deploy operations, and seasoned judgment to this task. The panel will assemble and thoroughly analyze all pertinent data, quantifiable and non-quantifiable. Further information on the panel will be forthcoming. Once the panel reports its recommendations and following my consultation with the Secretary of Homeland Security, I will provide my advice to the President concerning his policy direction. In the interim, current policy with respect to currently serving members will remain in place. I expect to issue interim guidance to the force concerning the president's direction, including any necessary interim adjustments to procedures to ensure the continued combat readiness of the force until our final policy is on this subject is issued. For a military person, that is written with surprising clarity. He just told the president of the United States to stick it up his ass.
He did, didn't he? From the beginning, he said, "We're not deferring to you. We're not taking."
I'm not. What he's saying is, I'm not going to let the president of the United States trash the military readiness of our of our force.
Right.
And you know what?
For all the pissing
and moaning that all the maggots did for 8 years during the Obama administration. Nobody in the military ever had to say that about anything Obama did relative to military readiness. What does it say that the handpicked Secretary of Defense is saying that he's not going to immediately implement the order of the President of the United States? He's practically begging Trump to fire him.
He's telling Trump he doesn't care, he doesn't respect him because he's a fool. This experiment in presidential buffoonery has to come to an end.
Well, right, and see, it was telling to me, Todd, that as I, you know, you did your thing this morning. I did mine. you know, I caught them. What was there? Somebody wrote an article in the Times, I think it was, saying the only thing worse than not impeaching Trump is impeaching Trump. So the New York Times is trying to soften up the nation against the idea of removing this disaster from office. And frankly, I'm not interested in hearing about how Pence is worse than Trump. Okay. He may wind up being worse than Trump. But when you've got an absolute certifiably mad individual with his thumb on the button, you got to do something about it or else accept the consequences for your failure.
Exactly. The military's already said now by that statement that you read that they're not willing in all cases to blindly obey any orders that come from the executive office. You know, 45, Trump. He's not stable. They're not willing to obey. So they're telling Trump, you know what? You can talk all the shit you want. However, you know, if you ask us to go to war with somebody and we're not really thinking that's a good idea, forget about it.
Well, it makes you wonder to what extent the military is actually willing to follow his orders. And that in its own right is disturbing.
Well, that's the whole thing. We're unstable now. This whole Russia shit, they have succeeded. Our whole shit's fucked up now. This is an unstable country now. Can you imagine the fucking Republicans have every seat they need in government to run and do whatever they want, and they still can't get their shit together? This is how disruptive this whole exercise has been. They never should. See, all our systems failed. They got greedy. The media got greedy because they were like, oh, this is good for our ratings. And they knew about him, okay? The Electoral College failed, and we know what that's about because that's just a fucking slavery vestige. So that's a bunch of bullshit. And, you know, our intelligence agencies failed. They knew what was happening. And maybe for some people it's too sophisticated to understand this direct marketing. And it mirrors exactly what happened in House of Cards, which is interesting. It was a very very similar scenario. It was similar. I'll put it like that. It was similar. Because apparently a lot of people do get their news from Facebook and what people post. And it doesn't even matter. Once you buy something online, they got your IP address and your MAC address, and they're going to target things toward you. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, there's one way to kind of circumvent that. Go to some website and look for something that is absolutely not at all interesting to you, and totally screw with the algorithm.
And go deep into it. Oh, what colors does it come in? How many sizes is it? Oh,
Yeah, drill deep.
And like, real deep. I got you. Hey, so I was able to grill out yesterday.
Oh yeah.
Because I thought. Oh man, it was beautiful. Oh my God, the weather was just beckoned me, and then I had to fire up the grill because I hadn't been around. I haven't grilled in weeks because I hadn't been around. But everything turned out great, and the smoke was great. So I'm saying it's grilling time. It's coming. It's nice and cool.
Oh yeah, and you know, college football technically has already begun. But it gets started in earnest this weekend.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
Sounds like a good time. Well, what is your what's gonna happen next? Man, something else is gonna happen tonight. There's a lot of stuff floating around.
Well, the mayor of I didn't get to the clips, but you know the real goofy shit has begun. For instance. Alex Jones has already more or less accused Democrats of running a false flag hurricane. There ain't enough dank enough bubble gum kush in the world that could make me high enough to make that up.
But wait a minute, Trump listens to him. Trump likes him.
Yeah, and it's obviously a developed message because the Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut, and Alex Jones are both blaming Democrats for not evacuating Houston. Now, if Houston had been evacuated, the scale of disaster, the scale of death would be measured in the tens of thousands. You can actually go out and look, you can actually go and search, Google photos or images or whatever. Search Hurricane Rita evacuation 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see the highways of Houston jam-packed and not moving.
I totally agree.
If that had happened with Harvey,
right,
every one of those automobiles would have been underwater.
Yeah, because it's still
okay.
The storm park,
but,
right on top of
the... But
the
Hannity job
the
is out there saying, Houston has a Negro mayor who's a Democrat, and the Negro Houston Democrat mayor didn't evacuate the city, so it's his fault. And Alex Jones is saying the same goddamn thing.
I'm sick of that fucking talking point. That's what they keep saying.
Well, they ran it during
I'm
Katrina.
Sick of that shit.
But the thing is, the fact that these two are saying it means that somewhere it is a coordinated message.
That's what they do.
It is the Negro's fault. And the next one will be, we wouldn't have had to rescue so many people if it weren't for the lazy Negroes who wouldn't evacuate.
Oh, God.
Remember when it was
God.
Black people's fault for Katrina?
They just
set the needle down on the record again.
Oh, my God. This is going to be worse now because they're all out and emboldened. Yeah.
And now, by the way, mm-hmm. there's a 10 p.m. curfew in effect for Houston, and you just hope the police can maintain a little bit of self-discipline and not just shoot people for it being out at 10:01. I hope nobody gets shot for needing rescued after 10.
I hope not. I'm praying for those people.
For the time, every day is going to bring something new and awful. And, Jesus. Todd, have yourself a good evening, man. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Thanks, Todd. You too.
Later. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Time to get out of here. I can happily report that thanks to Marcy and thanks to Ralph's, we took the fundraising goal down to $270. So sometime between now and 6 p.m. tomorrow, if we raise $270, then we will actually meet the fundraising goal for the entire month of August, because there will be no fundraising tomorrow evening or Thursday. I made a promise. I'm sticking to it. It's time to get out of here. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time in engaging in the program, however it is that you do. Thank you to those of you who also keep the program going, for everybody who can't or doesn't support the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening to Midweek Utility Chat Room Moderator Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Thanks for the FLOTUS photo, Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And remember, nominate Coal River Mountain Watch at smile.amazon.com. And Coal River Mountain Watch will receive a small portion of the proceeds of your every purchase. And every little bit helps. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.